Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today for you with another movie mastery, but this is a special one. Normally, this is the podcast where we watch the movies that you recommend, but not this week, not this time around. This one's for us.
Yeah, this is a system master, or sorry, a movie mastery special where we say, screw you people, we know what to watch.
Yeah, we know what is up, we know what's good for you, and we're going to give it to you like a dose of medicine. I am John, your host over there, your other host, Jeff.
Hello.
We're here every single goddamn time, and we keep watching your shitty dumb movies that you want us to watch, but now we're watching what we want to watch.
And it's good instead, so screw you guys. It's the best movie ever made.
We're going off the reservation this time. This episode, we have watched The Chipmunk Adventure.
So, just to specify, because there are about five Chipmunk movies.
Yeah, but this is The Chipmunk Adventure. The other ones have different names.
That's true. The other ones are called, let's see.
Like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, and then Road Chip, Chipwrecked.
Oh, don't you bring that CGI bullshit into here. I'm talking about the original animated.
Yeah, no, what we're talking about today is the 1987 movie, The Chipmunk Adventure.
Now, you might have seen this as a kid, or maybe you're born after 1987 and you're some kind of asshole. And
only 80s kids.
Only 80s kids will understand. So this movie is a Around the World in 80 Days style movie where the chipmunks and the chipettes are going to go around the world, and I don't know what's happening through my voice.
Yeah, what are you doing? What's going on?
I don't know
there?
What happened there. Something happened with voice and it just fucked up.
You just fell into an accent the way most people would fall off a curb or something.
Yeah, it was just weird.
Yeah. So yeah, basically the premise of this film is that the chipmunks and the chipettes are going to go on competing balloon race rides.
Yeah. If you have not seen this movie, it is absolutely bugfuck bonkers.
It's just madness from start to finish.
Now, you can see the whole thing fairly easily if you just go on to like YouTube. So if you want, and I recommend this, please go watch this film.
Yeah, because this is going to be a deep dive episode.
Now, this is only the second time I think we've said before listening to us, go watch this film. The other one was Big Money Rustlers.
That's correct. The
Insane Clown Posse cowboy movie. If you did go watch that, you know that when we recommend you go see something, we're not lying.
No, there's no lie in our voices. This is not a trick to get you to watch an old Chipmunks and Chipettes movie. The movie, it requires viewing for full understanding before we get started.
Yeah, because we are going like just balls deep into the meat of this movie.
Yeah, this movie's an onion, and
we're gonna go balls deep into this onion.
We're gonna put our balls in this onion, really onion up our balls.
I definitely recommend, if you haven't seen it, give it a watch. It's got some great songs, some less than great songs, some kind of racist songs.
There's some surprisingly racist content. I mean, just in general.
I mean, it's not super surprising. It's 1987.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, there's some interesting music. There's some hijinks.
Oh yeah. But it's a good fun time, start to finish. The animation is kind of weird.
Oh, it's very 80s. Well, I mean, we can definitely talk about the things that make the animation weird. But we'll have to do that after the break, I think.
So, just so you know, right now we're going to take our little music break and we'll be back. But while we do that, pause, go watch The Chipmunk Adventure, then come back and listen as we deep dive. We go a whole fist deep into The Chipmunk Adventure. Jeff, this movie is, like, it's maddening. It grabs a hold of you. It put hooks in me.
You know, most people listen to our show, like, in the car at work or something, so none of them did what you asked them to earlier.
Oh, I know. I know there are at least a couple people who are like, you know what? Yes, I will pause this right now. I don't care where I am. Next chance I get, I'm going to watch an hour and a half Alvin and the Chipmunks movie, and then I'm going to come back and listen to this.
Yeah.
And those who did, I appreciate you.
Now, those are the people who we're going to be directing the next about hour of content at, is the people who did that. So if this is exceedingly confusing to you, you've got no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah.
So, don't worry, though. It'll still be funny because there is nothing about this movie that isn't weird and funny. And John's right. It gets its hooks in you, and all of a sudden you have nothing but questions. I mean, my room is nothing now but like index cards and pictures of chipmunks, and they're all connected with red strings.
Oh, yeah. There's just circles around things and questions around a dude named Jamal. It's crazy.
It's insane. So, all right. Let's start it up with the animation weirdness that makes up the Chipmunks 80s cartoon universe.
Now, you might remember if you ever watched the old 80s cartoon or you caught glimpses of it, when you're looking at the Chipmunks or the Chipettes, it seems like fairly standard 80s animation. Like, you know, any sort of He-Man or G.I. Joe, it just sort of looks like a regular animated TV show.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, once you get to the humans that live in this world, it is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, because they're kind of, I mean, they're more realistic than you remember. That's the thing. I think when you picture Dave Seville, the guy who theoretically owns the Chipmunks, but really is more like their dad or something. I don't know. That relationship terrifies me.
It's a dad-manager relationship, yeah, which is just exploitative and weird, but we'll get into it.
Oh, yeah, that worked real well for the Culkin kids. So he basically sort of wards these Chipmunks. You probably remember him as basically looking like John Arbuckle from Garfield. You know, a vaguely human-shaped brunette mass of whatever that moves around in the background.
Yeah, you know, when you think about him, you're just like, oh, yeah, that's just a very generic guy that's in the background. Okay, sure.
But instead, he is like a photo tracing of Robin Thicke.
The weird thing for this is all of the humans in this have crazy exaggerated responses to everything.
Yes.
Like, their faces are constantly like,
they are very exaggerated in their movements, but they are also near photorealistic in terms of how to draw a person.
Which is why it's so weird, because it's like watching a person mug for everything they say.
It's like everyone in the movie is played by Jim Carrey.
Yeah, like, we meet one of the villains of this, Claudia. Klaus and Claudia are our two main villains.
Mm-hmm.
And Claudia is always like going between weird big-eyed smiles and just like full mouth snarls, and it's so weird to have something that is animated to look as close to human as possible but then also exaggerated so much.
It's like if someone took the Glenn Close Cruella de Vil and then traced over it and then animated it, but instead of using Glenn Close's movements, used a wolf's.
It's true. Everyone's super exact. I think the only human in this that doesn't hit that super weird, uncanny valley, like,
it's got to be Mrs. Miller,
right? Miss Miller, because Miss Miller is the only one who is as weird looking as you would assume someone animated in this universe should be.
Mrs. Miller, looks like basically they took a whole bunch of photorealistic humans that are constantly mugging and moving around as if they were in their own personal hell, and then added one more human to it, except that she's just a live action version of a Far Side cartoon.
Yeah, she is just a strange, frumpy, large-haired woman who, I mean, let's be honest, she's nice. She's a nice old lady, but she's just crazy.
She's a little bit batty, basically. She's a daffy old lady. So, meanwhile, and then you got the Chipmunks who move around like you remember, like little cartoon animals.
Yeah.
So, it's just a weird kind of cross-reference between the two. They don't appear to exist in the same universe.
Yeah, because it's not like the Chipmunk faces are constantly going into like these weird, exaggerated expressions. They're just talking normal.
The other thing is you can tell that the humans are traced from photo reference because they have way thicker
they got lines. Them thick creases.
They got thick creases. No, what I was going to say is that they have outlines.
Yes.
They have stronger, thicker outlines than the Chipmunks and the Chipettes do. And it means that it looks like they exist on different planes of existence.
Oh, yeah. It definitely feels like the Chipmunks have crossed over into this strange dimension.
Yeah, it's like they're in the Upside Down and there's these ghosts of humans walking around and they're like, Dave, can I go with you to Europe? Dave? And Dave's like, what is that? I hear sort of a whispery howling in the distance.
And then Dave turns around and he's like,
tell him Large Marge sent you.
Only 80s kids.
So the basic premise at the beginning of this film is that Dave has to go on
a business trip,
an extended 3-week business trip that is way too businessy for the boys.
Now, does he say 3 week? Because at no point do I think I remember him saying the length of his trip.
I don't think he does. I mean, I'm basing that based on a rough approximation of how long he appears to be gone, but it could literally just be a weekend.
The time scale in this movie is
impossible.
Impossible. Like, yeah. The actual time scale of this means Dave was on vacation or whatever for like a year.
For at least a year. And not on vacation. Let's be clear. He is on a business trip.
Oh, yes. He is on a quotations business trip.
Now, he mentioned several times that he would love to take the boys with him, but he can't because this trip is too businessy and he will only be businessing.
Yes. I'm sorry, boys, but I just can't take you. It's just business. This isn't a vacation. You can't go with me. And Dave is lying.
Oh, he is lying his ass off. He's going on a lot. First of all, let's get this right. Let's start with one of our first deep dive questions here, John. What is Dave's job?
Okay, Dave Seville is, as far as I can tell, the Chipmunks' manager?
Yes, he is presumably responsible for ensuring that their concerts occur.
Yeah.
And, like, handling the sales of their albums and stuff like that.
You would think that.
Yes.
I think he is also a musician as well.
I think that's always kind of been established that he's like a saxophonist or something, that he had a music career before he met the boys.
Yeah.
No, I believe he specifically plays piano.
Yeah, he was a guy who wrote music and played music and then found the Chipmunks and decided, I'm just going to be a manager for them.
Look, being a pianist hasn't been working for me in the long term. What I need to do is follow the traditional pianist's course to stardom, find three talking chipmunks in a park, and force them to be a band.
Yes. That is, of course, the traditional way that a pianist proceeds in their career.
That's what worked for every famous pianist you've ever heard of.
Yep.
So he's like their manager or something. Even if he was off on vacation or on business as a musician, he'd still be doing music stuff, right?
Well, I mean, a lot of it could be meeting with like venue managers, trying to talk to like business people in various different countries, seeing what like the laws are there for what you have to do to put on a concert.
So I don't want to go out of order here, and I don't want to spoil this entirely, but we see Dave at two locations around the world throughout the course of this film. One of them is right in the damn middle of Paris.
Like, we are put, the lie is put to his whole I'm not going on vacation thing the second we do this. They call Dave up at one point, do the Chipmunks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 3 a.m. in Paris. He wakes up groggily, and we see his hotel room.
It is the inside of the wedding cake dimension.
It is basically like if you were to take a like old aristocratic French castle or some shit and go like, oh, what did one of the kings live in? This. It is a giant bed.
Yeah, it looks like someone took a portion of the castle at Versailles and then asked Lisa Frank to come in and decorate it.
Oh, it's huge. Like, the ceilings are ridiculously high up. He's got a giant bed that's ridiculously ornate. There's
enormous balcony.
Enormous balcony, huge curtains, and of course, his balcony overlooks immediately the Eiffel Tower. It is, like, right next to where he is.
Now, I understand that that's because for kids, they need to understand that he is in France, so they're going to put him within easy viewing distance of the only French thing that kids know about.
Yes.
But the implication when you're watching it is, there's no way this guy's on a business trip. He's in some fucking giant sex hotel immediately adjacent to the only thing that's missing is, like, some chipmunk prostitute that's hiding in the bathroom during the whole conversation.
Like, even if they were like, oh, well, we need to show the Eiffel Tower just to make sure everyone knows that, yes, he is in Paris. Even if you didn't want to do an establishing shot and then go to him, he is still in, like, a room that is bigger than a house.
Yes. And the only other time we're going to see Dave out in the world is when he is sightseeing within about a mile of the Acropolis in Athens.
Yes.
So he is, whatever business trip he's on, it is nothing but tourist shit.
Oh, yeah. He is just running around with conspicuous consumption.
He's just sick of the chipmunks. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah. He's like, look, I gotta go on a business trip. And by that, I mean, I am going to sample the prostitutes of Europe.
Yeah. I mean, the problem that this is going to call into question is, this is an 80s cartoon, and 80s cartoons were usually about wish fulfillment for kids, but how rich are the chipmunks?
Well, they live in a giant goddamn house in L.A.
That's true. They live in, like, straight up a Beverly Hills-style mansion, but they appear to only have one outfit.
Well, the chipmunks do. Well, Dave can wear whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, but he always wears the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and then they're like, what do they do for fun? They go play, like, video games in a local arcade where they are not recognized as the celebrities that you'd think they would be recognized as.
You would think that. The TV show and this movie have a very strange way of being like, oh yeah, these guys are, like, super big music performers, but sometimes they have people who are like, oh my god, the chipmunks, and
most of the time,
they just are able to walk around and do whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, how often did, like, Jem and the Holograms have to fucking deal with that shit?
Jem and the Holograms never had to deal with that shit because their costumes were holograms. They didn't look like Jem and the Holograms, John.
Well, what about Josie and the Pussycats, then? What about any other girl band?
Josie and the Pussycats weren't nearly as famous as the Chipmunks are purported to be. They're a local high school band at best.
At best.
Yeah, that's the thing. Jem and the Holograms were a worldwide sensation, but they were dressed up in holograms by a super intelligent computer.
So you're telling me that I wouldn't be able to recognize them
without
their, like, weird pink hologram makeup?
That's correct. Without the weird pink hologram makeup, the purple bubble hair. I mean, for God's sake, John, the main one gets a star over one of her eyes. How are you going to tell the difference between her and her with a star tattoo?
I know, right?
So I just find your question foolish and offensive on the face of it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
I'm sorry. I retract.
It's okay. It's all right. So, Dave goes off on vacation, but the boys are desperate to go with him. Alvin tries to trick his way into going with him. Alvin also has to introduce himself as just kind of an idiot, because the very first lines he gets is like, I need to go on vacation with Dave. How else am I going to see the Louvre in Athens?
Yeah, the Louvre is in France.
See? I don't even know that.
Yeah,
that's good. That's not indication that you deserve a trip to Paris, Alvin. It's just indication that you're dumb.
Well, yeah, but Alvin's an idiot. Let's be honest.
Alvin's
here.
A little starfucker idiot. It's true. He is not established as an especially intelligent character.
No, I mean, while Simon is established to be a very smart character,
too smart, a little too smart.
Slightly, he's slightly too smart in that they'll just let him know things randomly.
Yes.
But then not let him know other things.
Yeah. Like, there's a part of this when he's reading, like, ancient tribal Fijian.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, I can translate this.
Yeah.
And you're like,
duh.
What?
Of course.
When did a fucking chipmunk be like, oh, yeah, no, I've studied ancient tribal language of the Fiji Isles.
Yeah. So that was a little unusual. But all right. So basically, they try to trick Dave into letting them go with him. Dave's has having none of it. We get our first Alvin of the movie.
And then we find out that Mrs. Miller is going to come over and watch the boys while Dave is gone.
Mrs. Beatrice Miller.
Mrs. Goddamn Beatrice Miller.
So this is an interesting thing. The boys are disappointed right away when they hear that Beatrice Miller is going to be their babysitter. They're like, oh,
she's so scatterbrained and meh.
Yeah, she's dumb and boring, Dave. Here's the thing, though, and this is an important question. I don't know that much about the 80s Chipmunk TV show.
Okay.
In fact,
I know everything, so please ask me.
When I was going into the show, my impression was that the Chipettes, the Chipettes, Brittany, Eleanor, and Jeanette, that they live in a treehouse by themselves, and they are not part of this whole complicated culture of Hollywood star celebrity or whatever.
Now, unfortunately, you are accurate, but only up to a point.
Yeah.
Now, at one point during the episode, Wanted: Mommy, the Chipettes are found to be living alone in this treehouse by a teacher. Now, the teacher says this is obviously not okay, and they're going to be sent to an orphanage.
Wait, aren't they chipmunks?
Yes, like, but...
All right, moving on.
But they are children first.
They're children first. Are they even really chipmunks, or are they just... Do the six of them just have a rare genetic abnormality that makes them look chipmunky?
Chipmunk-human hybrids.
Okay, they're Moreau chipmunks.
But they are afforded all of the same rights and just responsibilities as a human.
Okay.
So, because they are still minors living alone...
Okay.
They are going to be sent to an orphanage. Now, Dave originally is like, you can come live with us.
Yeah, it seems like he would be the immediate person that the local authorities would contact.
Well, it also seems like he would also be the one that, for the show, they'd be like, oh, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah, we need to get, because that way we can get all six of them in a house and we can have hijinks and whatever.
Yeah.
And also, it just seems like, organically, that would make sense for Dave to be like, oh, sweet, girl versions of my cash cow? Perfect.
Oh, good, another band I can manage.
Yeah, this is exactly what I need. More children that can sing that I can control financially.
Now, what happened, though, is they eventually got adopted by Mrs. Miller.
Yes, and then they live in her house for a while.
And then they lived with her and took her last name.
And took her last name.
Yeah, so they are...
Eleanor, Brittany, and Jeanette Miller.
Yes, so they live with Mrs. Miller. Now, that happened in 1986. This movie came out in 1987.
So here's the thing that leads us to wonder about, because the first thing that happens is Mrs. Miller shows up to look after the boys. Now, she's not just babysitting. She's house sitting. She's sleeping there. We know this because the very next day, she's at their house in a bathrobe with curlers in her hair, making them breakfast.
Yes.
So she stayed the night.
She's definitely staying in the house every time we cut back to Mrs. Miller during this movie, she is always in the Seville household.
So here's the question then. Does that mean that in order to look after the boys, she straight up abandoned the Chipettes?
Yes, that is exactly what happened. Now, I mean, the Chipette background is they grew up on the mean streets of like Australia and New York. So they can take care of themselves. They lived by themselves in a treehouse for years.
This is something that the folks at home don't know. The Chipettes are chipmunks from Australia. Now, let's go ahead and set aside that there aren't chipmunks in Australia. That's not important. There are three, and they were the Chipettes. And then they have the same problem that they always have, which is that someone notices that three children are living alone and pushes them into an orphanage, where they become the wards of another orphan girl named Olivia for a while. And then the four of them escape to America on a boat called the American Dreamer.
Yep.
Where they land in New York. And for a couple seasons of the show, probably less than a season, actually.
Well, no, this is just the background episode.
Oh, okay. The backstory episode.
Yeah.
They take jobs as menial, like washing women and stuff on the streets of New York.
They're just laborers that are homeless in New York.
That is correct. They are still way smaller than even the chipmunks are. They're like little tiny hand-sized Chipettes at this point. Then they go to San Francisco, where they take a singing career. And again, we're still talking about the Chipettes backstory here, from the 80s cartoon. This isn't all from some comic book that we're
no, this,
like some
this,
Dark Horse Chipettes backstory.
We aren't deep dive expanded universe here.
No, this is just the cartoon. Just in case you were curious if we were like reading someone's fanfic. No, they go to San Francisco and they take a job as singers under the name The Chipmunks.
Because they are chipmunks.
Or chipmunky, anyway. And so they take a job.
No, chipmunkies are different. Now, those are chipmunk-monkey hybrids.
That is correct.
Instead of
yeah.
chipmunk-human hybrids.
Yeah. So, wait, well, how come the chipmunks aren't called like the chipmumans then?
Oh, well, that would be weird.
That would be weird.
Because it's half chipmunk, half human monks.
Hi there. I'm Chipmuman. Are you interested in real estate in the Tacoma area?
Hi. I'm Bill Chipman.
All right. So.
Okay, let's really dive into this at this point. The main plot starts when the Chipmunks and Chipettes are playing the video game Around the World in 30 Days, which is weird.
It is a hot air balloon simulator video game with strong action elements.
Yes. The great thing about it is when you look at it, when it's not focused in on it, it's just two hot air balloons going up and down.
Uh-huh.
When you actually focus in on it, it looks like they have to dodge things.
Yes.
So it's...
It's got all the excitement of, say, like a Space Ace, or even worse, maybe one of those old Tiger Electronic LCD games.
Yeah, it's just, oh, I have to go left to dodge this pyramid and right to dodge the next pyramid.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what they're doing. But in the background, we have Klaus and Claudia,
mm-hmm.
and they are trying to find a way to get their diamonds smuggled into other countries for people that want to pay for them. But every time they try to do this, Jamal ends up like stopping them and confiscating their diamonds.
This is the conversation that they're having, that they are trying to distribute these diamonds and they keep getting stopped by Jamal.
Yeah, Jamal keeps finding them and taking their diamonds, so they need a way to deliver diamonds to people around the world without Jamal taking them.
So here's the first question I have for you, John.
Yes.
Is it illegal to sell diamonds to people?
Apparently, in this dimension, selling diamonds to anyone is hyper illegal.
So either the diamonds are stolen, like maybe they're selling stolen diamonds, like maybe Klaus and Claudia are notorious diamond thieves?
Maybe.
But it seems more like all they're doing is fencing.
No, it looks like all they're doing is selling. They're like diamond wholesalers.
Yes, but
it's illegal to sell diamonds anywhere in another country.
I'd say for a couple minutes, I was pretty sure that diamonds was just a euphemism and that the chipmunks were actually going to end up smuggling coke all the way through this movie. I mean, it's 1987.
Well, the thing is, diamonds... as a thing that they are smuggling in this, I guess they had to pick something that kids would understand.
Yes.
But what it ends up being is, this is a world where diamonds are illegal.
Yes. Diamonds are an illegal thing to sell or own.
Because even if, let's say, they had a big diamond heist,
mm-hmm.
and they got just bags of illegal diamonds.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I then take those diamonds to, let's say, Europe, and mm-hmm. sell them, no one in Europe is looking for my diamonds. Because if I stole it from some diamond store in, like, New York, and then I'm in Europe, the dude in Germany isn't like, wait a minute, are these diamonds from New York? No, they're just like, great, give me some diamonds.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how the 80s work. There's international bodies that protect or that are for regulatory trade control. So maybe they're trying to dodge tariffs. Maybe they're trying to dodge paying taxes or entry fees.
This is what I assume. I assume this is tariff dodging.
Yeah, that's probably what. But anyway, all of it's going to be lost on 8 or 9 year olds. To the average viewer of this film, it's these guys have illegal super diamonds that they are selling for money, and that's bad.
Yes. They are bad guys with illegal diamonds.
They're bad guys with diamonds, and diamonds are bad. Don't ever do diamonds, kids. Not even once.
Never diamonds.
So the implication is right away that Klaus and Claudia, who we should probably describe, but right before we do that, the implication is that the two of them are very clearly also criminals, and they are being stopped by other criminals.
Yeah, the whole idea is Jamal knows their agents and where they're going, and he keeps intercepting these diamonds, and it sounds like he is stealing from them.
Yes, yeah. And so they are watching the kids play hot air balloon race around the world in 30 days, which, by the way, Brittany is super winning, because Alvin made a couple of mistakes and flew into the Great Pyramid, or the Sphinx, and then in order to catch up, he has to take the shortcut through Fiji.
Okay, when is Fiji ever a shortcut?
Well, in a video game, it makes a little bit of sense, because it's just a level. It's like a warp pipe. It's like, hey, you can either choose to take the simple route and go through, I don't know, let's pick someplace at random out of my ass, Morocco, or you can go to the Fiji level, which is really hard, but it lets you skip having to play through, like, Pitcairn Island or something, and you get to skip right to the really hard New York level. So that's the one time it makes any kind of sense, is in the video game sequence. And of course, it doesn't work for him. His balloon, after managing to dodge the spears of natives and the many dozens of Fijian volcanoes, is finally grabbed out of the air by a jumping saltwater crocodile.
Yes.
So he loses, and Brittany wins.
They get into a big fight over who would win in real life.
Yes.
And this makes Claudia get an idea. Jamal knows all their agents, but he would never suspect children of delivering diamonds.
Certainly not famous children. Again, this is a problem. This is like being, I know how to do this. We'll hire all three of the kids from Home Improvement and have them fly around the world in a hot air balloon.
I know what we'll do. We'll get One Direction to deliver diamonds for us.
I'm trying to go with like nine. It's the kids from Home Improvement, and then they have
Home Improvement's 90s. You fucked up still.
Oh, I'm sorry, in the 80s. We'll have the New Kids on the Block race against the children from Punky Brewster, and no one will suspect.
I'm going to have MC Hammer deliver these diamonds.
Who would suspect him?
Who?
He's already bedecked in diamonds and gold. We'll have MC Hammer fly one balloon and Mr. T the other, and no one will be the wiser.
Yes, certainly they would pity the fool who tries to stop Mr. T. And of course, I know that MC Hammer will deliver these diamonds and not stop, for he is too legit to quit.
Additionally, no one can touch him.
Not even Jamal. Okay, so...
Man, that's a way better movie. I want to see that so bad.
So they, Klaus and Claudia...
Approach the children.
Just...
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous looking. Klaus is balding on the top to the point where he's not quite at the horseshoe haircut, but it's getting there.
Yeah, and what remains is a kind of white-black combo.
Yeah, he's got that, like, it's black until it's white, and then it's a Michael Jackson video.
And both of them basically look like idle rich Euro trash, and they both have kind of vaguely European accents.
Well, they're Klaus and Claudia Furstein.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They were the Von Fursteins.
Yeah.
And I still couldn't tell you where the hell they're from. They sound vaguely Eastern European, maybe?
I don't know. Probably German-ish.
They could be Austrian or from the Balkans. I don't know.
Somewhere in that area.
Yeah, so the two of them are staggeringly wealthy.
Yes.
And Claudia is accompanied everywhere she goes by a little dog named Sophie.
And Sophie is...
Like a Yorkie maybe?
Just looks unhealthy.
Yeah, just a sickly little Yorkie who is also very pampered and wealthy and is very slightly more intelligent than a normal dog would be. So like
the animal intelligence levels
of the chipmunk universe
in this world is definitely something to be discussed.
It's worth talking about. Sophie is sort of a mid-range between the chipmunks and just animals.
Yeah, she doesn't have a language really. She just sort of barks or yelps. She's definitely pampered and understands like that she is pampered.
Yes.
And like has revenge things where she understands like, oh, I can pop someone's like balloon and make things happen.
Yeah, and she wants things delivered to her in rich people fashion. For example, there's a scene where she's floating on a pool floaty in rich people's fountain pool, and she has a dog bone with her that is in a martini glass.
Yes.
And she appears to insist that her bones are delivered to her in martini glass format. So that's...
Well, that's... I mean, that's fine. I definitely have preferences on how I want my bones delivered to me.
Secretly, through the back door.
Hey now.
Is that... Am I correct?
Huh? Did you get it?
All right. So Sophie... So that's them. The three of them are just rich Euro trash types. They approach the various monks and Ets, and they're like, we couldn't help but overhear your conversation.
We've got a bet going, and I think that you would win, while she thinks that you would win.
Now, please come to our house tomorrow, and we'll make it happen for real. We're quite wealthy. And
the winner will get $100,000.
$1,000 American, U.S. currency, yeah,
and
good.
Number one, okay.
Okay. Cowboy bang bang good times.
Who wants a mustache ride?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now is the time we dance.
So they obviously, having heard that $100,000 are going to be on the line, both Brittany and Alvin, who are the fucking worst.
Oh, well, they're the ones with ambition. The two, because you know, Eleanor and Theodore in this movie might as well not be in this movie.
Yeah.
There's only one thing that Eleanor ever does. Theodore is literally just hapless and put upon.
Well, Theodore is just there to be like, I'm hungry. And Eleanor is just there to be like, oh, I'm shy.
Yeah. So basically, you've got Alvin and Brittany, who have no sense of self-preservation whatsoever and are dumb and gullible. And then you've got Simon and Jeanette, who are smart but not backbony enough to do anything with that smartness.
Oh yeah, they understand that these idiot leaders of their groups,
mm-hmm,
are the worst and shouldn't be doing what they are doing, and there are much better things they should be doing, but they do not have the stones to be like, hey, fuck you, we aren't doing this.
Yeah, this is dumb.
They'll ask, they'll be like, please, can we not, please?
Yeah, and that's as far as they're allowed to go. So basically, the boys and the girls agree that they are going to meet at the Von Furstein compound the next day, to do a race around the world in balloons. They go home, and we don't follow the Chipettes home because it would be sad. They'd go back to their house. They would go
to an empty house where they're like, I guess we'll pack to leave because it's not like Mrs. Miller will notice.
This is insane. That if we went to their house, we'd be the situation that has to be playing out for them would come into focus. That Mrs. Miller left them for money so she could go watch the boys, which she prefers to do anyway.
Yeah.
And that they're just in an empty house now, fending for themselves, just like they always have.
Now, the boys, the aforementioned call to Dave in his ridiculous palatial mansion in Paris happens.
It's a trick. Alvin needs to record him saying things so he can cobble a recording together of Dave asking the boys to meet him.
Yeah, so just little phrases are going to get cut up and put into this recorder so that it sounds like he's asking for the boys to come visit him in Europe.
That is correct, yeah.
The weird thing to this is... This works. That's not weird. The weird thing is, the whole thing is, oh, I want the boys to come visit me in Europe. Miss Miller doesn't drive them to an airport. She isn't like, oh, okay, let me go ahead and get some tickets for them. Let me do whatever. No, she's just like, oh, they're going to go visit you in Europe? Okay, they're getting in a taxi. Goodbye, children.
Yeah, she has no agency whatsoever. The next morning, after they finish making their tape recording, they're all sitting down for breakfast, and if I remember correctly, Simon is having grapefruit, Alvin is having toast, and then Theodore is having, like, 50 things.
Yeah, he's having the full English.
Yeah, Theodore's going to have the cereal and the waffles and the bacon
and
the hash browns and the eggs and the couscous and the pizza. And I was like, all right, I get it. Except that we never see Theodore really. He's not a comically fat character. He's very slightly chubby.
Yeah.
And he seems pretty reasonable in the things he orders. When he's in Athens, he doesn't order anything ridiculous. He asks for couscous and dolma.
Yep.
Normal things to request.
Yep. I mean, when he's in Mexico City, he goes
crazy
whole hog.
Yeah. But anyway, they play a recording for Miss Miller over the phone, which I'm still not sure how they caused the phone to ring at all, because they call her on the house line from another house line. I guess they just have multiple houses. It's a huge palatial mansion. Of course, there's more than one landline in there.
Yeah, why not?
So they call her from one of the landlines, and they play a tape recording, which breaks several times.
Yeah, it's just a comic thing of like, oh, you sound drunk. Or,
Mrs. Miller.
Are you drunk, David?
And then it starts playing backwards, and it's actually quite, it's one of the very few funny things that occurs in the movie.
But.
Runyip von Hirnfrauer. And she's like, what? Can you? Huh?
What?
Well, Mrs. Miller, I want the boys, Alvin, Simon, and Theodore to meet me in Europe. I don't know why they went to such extreme lengths. Once he got the boys, he was fine.
Eh.
How do you even get the boys?
The boys.
How do you get to... I mean, it's way easier to get him to say the names than to refer to the boys, of which Alvin, who he was talking to, is a member.
He was like, oh, what's that song you really like? And he's like, what, the boys are back in town?
Yeah, that's the one. What's that Thin Lizzy song you like so well?
What was that?
You know, the one that's really unpleasant once you actually stop and think about it?
Yeah.
Anyway. You mean any Thin Lizzy song? You got it, Alvin. I'll just list them all. All right, so
they go. The Chipettes at the Fursteins.
All right, and here is where this movie goes 100% budfuck insane and makes no sense going forward.
Okay, so the scheme that they have so that these children don't know that they are delivering diamonds and getting cash for it is they've created dolls. These are dolls that are perfect tiny doll replicas of both the Chipmunks and the Chipettes. When they are going to deliver a doll, they have a box of ones that look like them. So the Chipettes have Chipette dolls, the Chipmunks have Chipmunk dolls.
Yes.
When they deliver a doll, it gets taken away and then replaced with one of the opposing team's dolls.
Yes. So if you put down a Simon doll, a little Eleanor doll will come back.
Yeah.
So none of the boys or the girls remark on how weird it is that the first Von Fursteins have hundreds of Chipmunk and Chipette dolls. And this is where we need to stop and talk about the plan.
Okay. So each of them have 12 dolls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least 24 between the two teams that they get immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then another 24 that are scattered throughout the world.
Now, scattered throughout the world is important because what that means is that over the course of the past, oh, I don't know, maybe 16 hours, the Von Fursteins had 48 Chipmunk and Chipette dolls made and shipped to insane locations around the world based on a spur-of-the-moment idea they had about how to smuggle diamonds around the world.
Now, the question I have is, did they straight up Etsy this shit and be like,
no, it was 1987?
Well, I mean, go like, oh, who makes dolls around here and have them make them? Or are the Chipmunks and Chipettes so famous that there are already dolls of them?
That, I figure that that's probably the case. The Chipmunk and Chipette dolls aren't rare. That when they saw them, they were just like, oh, you found a bunch of those, huh? What do you know?
Except they open it and they're like, oh, they look just like us. Like, they're surprised that they exist. Then again, it may be that Dave has sold the rights to their likenesses and they don't realize.
They have no idea that these things exist.
Oh, yeah. He's been selling these Chipmunk dolls on the black market for years.
Either way, it's insane. Either the boys have no idea that there are dolls of them that are super common all around the world and easy to find everywhere, or the Fursteins worked overnight to make 48 incredible dolls and then not just ship them around the world, but to places that you can't just ship things.
Oh, yeah. No, the fact that there are dolls waiting in various places means it wasn't that they shipped these dolls out. They had to go like, hey, my guy who wants diamonds that I'm selling to in fucking Bermuda, can you get a doll made that looks like Theodore of the Chipmunks?
And if it's not famous enough that Theodore is easily recognizable to, like, if these dolls were custom made by them, that means that they went home having met these kids for about 15 minutes yesterday and made 48 identical dolls that look exactly like them, and then managed via, 24 phone conversations with people who probably don't speak the same language as them to get them to make perfect recreation dolls of the Chipmunks and Chipettes based on only on visual description of someone they met yesterday.
Yep.
So when you're making the Jeanette doll, it's important that she's kind of dressed like a frumpy Diane Keaton. So you get the idea with the glasses. You get where I'm coming from on the glasses. So what you're looking for is a purple skirt that seems like it's the right length but turns out to be too short when she tries to move. Also, she's wearing those big leg warmer sock hybrid combo. You know what I mean? Like, you're looking for
it's the 80s. You know what I mean.
You know the pooch socks that people wore at the time. She's wearing a sweater that frumps to the left. That's important.
I like to imagine that they actually said, it's the 80s, you know what I mean. Come on, guys, it's the 80s.
I mean, it's way easier to describe the Chipmunk dolls. All right, well, all three of them are wearing long-sleeved turtleneck primary color
shirts.
Floor-length cassock t-shirts. And if the red ones have an A on them and the blue and the green ones do not, the end.
Done.
All right, no problem. So yeah, these dolls are impossible and make no sense. And then, as if that wasn't weird and crazy enough, they introduced the chipmunks and chipettes to their mode of transit, unpowered hot air balloons.
Actual, for real hot air balloons that none of them know how to drive, and we know this because the first scene of them getting in it is them, like, slamming into each other and trying to figure out how to steer.
Yeah.
They don't send anyone that knows how to fly a hot air balloon with them. Their plan is not only garbage because they're like, oh, we're going to try and, like, smuggle diamonds through a hot air balloon. You're sending children to do it in a hot air balloon that they don't know how to pilot. The chances are your millions of dollars of diamonds are going to be lost somewhere when these children die in the middle of the ocean.
They took off in friggin' Beverly Hills in hot air balloons. They are going to land in the San Fernando Valley.
And be dead.
A few hours later is what's going to happen. Eventually, they won't know how to keep the fire lit. It'll turn off, and the hot air balloons will land in the porn capital of the world with a bunch of dolls full of diamonds.
Yep.
And that's all that's going to happen because hot air balloons don't go very far.
Also, another thing, let's just go ahead and say this. Their plan is these children are not going to notice that these dolls feel like lumpy rocks are in them. And they have zippers that they will not open and go, holy shit, diamonds.
Actually, they don't have zippers. The one time they get one open, it rips open.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know that. But when he's putting the diamonds in there, he puts the diamonds in a doll and zips it up.
Oh, he must zip it up and then seal it again. That's it.
They have to, like, use a knife to open it up later and be like, oh my god, there's money in here when they open up one of the other dolls.
Yeah.
But to start with, when, like, Klaus is putting stuff in there, it is just straight up, I zipped up the back of this doll.
God damn it. So they send them off on their adventure, and immediately their adventure just goes haywire because no one knows how to fly the balloons around. So Simon is hanging from one of them screaming, and he almost kicks Klaus in the face, and everyone's falling down, and the balloons are knocking over trees and everything. They have a brief conversation.
I want to mention the very brief conversation that Simon and Jeanette have.
Yes.
Where they're talking about the route, and Simon says, you're going to Bermuda first.
Mm-hmm.
Do not take the easterly route because there is a hurricane.
Yes.
Okay. You're in LA. The westerly route is to travel all the way around the world to get to Bermuda because it is just east of the U.S.
I mean, I guess the idea is that you're supposed to go straight east across the United States, past Bermuda, then south, then approach from the west.
Like, I don't... He said to take the westerly route instead of the easterly one, and that's impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible, but also it's suspicious, because when he first goes, I heard, and for some reason at this point, Simon is talking like one of the characters from a Snoopy special, I heard on the radio that there is an hurricane approaching. Hurricane
Anne.
And hurricane. I'm speaking with the French pronunciation where
there is a hurricane.
And hurricane approach. But Brittany's having none of it. She thinks that Simon is trying to trick Jeanette
into going a longer route because their route is easier. And so he's like, oh, they're trying to stall us.
First of all, their route is not easier. Taking a hot air balloon to Bermuda is insane. The boys just have to go down South America.
Yeah, the boys, first off, is Mexico City, and L.A. to Mexico City, way easier than L.A. to Bermuda.
Yeah, so Jeanette's like, oh, thanks, we'll keep that in mind. And Brittany's like, no, we won't. And I don't understand. Brittany, by this point, should know Simon. Like, she's met Simon on several occasions in the past.
Yeah, if Alvin had been like, oh, you should take the westerly route, she'd be like, oh, fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. That guy is untrustworthy. Simon is way too naive to be mistrusted. He's smart, and that's all.
Yeah, he's a smart, nice kid, and that's it.
Yeah, so if he's like, hey, there's a hurricane that way, you can trust him.
Yeah.
But anyway, they don't, and
They get hit by a hurricane.
They get hit by a hurricane. And here's how we know they get hit by a hurricane. Their hair's all frizzy, their balloon's lying sideways, and they're in Bermuda, and it's sunny.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, that was a hurricane. Why can't you admit it? And I'm like, well, you still managed to land on Bermuda in a working balloon, so...
And your balloon isn't ruined.
It's just sideways.
Yeah, although... Here's the thing. Their clothes are torn to the point of almost being naked.
Oh, yeah. They're practically in jungle clothes at that point.
And I'm like, you know, high winds don't tend to shred clothes.
I think they got in a fight. I think they were literally up there just tearing each other. You dipshit!
Yeah, that's what happened.
Or they got hit by lightning. That was the other thing I thought was likely. Was
well, because they all have, like, ridiculous poofed out hair.
Yeah, they have poof hair, which suggested to me that they were hit by harmless childhood lightning.
Yeah.
You know, little lightnings.
Little lightnings.
Them Tyco little lightnings.
Yeah, those remote-controlled lightnings.
So why don't we handle Bermuda first?
Bermuda is an area where they have to go to a boat, and there's a guy there that they need to give dolls to.
Yes.
Or a doll to, because everyone gets one. Now, we also are, at this point, being chased by agents of Jamal.
Yes, and we have seen Jamal at this point, and Jamal is a...
He looks like the fucking Godfather.
He does. He looks like a vaguely Middle Eastern god, like maybe like a Southern Italian version of the god. Like, he's darker of skin, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's got that like little pencil mustache. Mm-hmm. He's in a white
fez
suit.
He's wearing a fez and a white suit. He looks like the Turkish or the Moroccan godfather.
Yeah.
And he's all, hello, I am talking like this.
I am Jamal. I need my agents to go get these people.
Go and catch these boys and girls. Do whatever you have to do.
So the, which means that Klaus and Claudia's they'll never suspect children is immediately ruined because Furstein's butler, Mario, just rats on them right away.
Right. So at this point, it seems like the movie ought to be over because Jamal's men have been told, and normally it's hard for Jamal's men to catch Claudia and Klaus's people. It should be easy for them to catch six children.
Yeah, the fact that they're like, oh yeah, Jamal's men keep intercepting our shit, and we're sending out actual for reals agents to do this, so...
Yeah, so let's talk about the agents, because there are two of them. I don't remember either of their names, although I think they get mentioned.
Cuomo and...
That's right, yeah.
Like... I want to say like Ovo or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So one of them is a big burly dude in a leather jacket.
Yep.
And then Cuomo is
straight up looks like an old Dick Tracy villain.
Yeah, he looks like a 1950s idea. He looks like what Dick Tracy thought Mexicans looked like in 1958.
Yes, that is correct. He's got a gold tooth, and he just looks sinister, and he cannot go into a scene without, like...
Flashing the tooth.
Flashing the tooth. He's got to do a full mouth grin that flashes that gold tooth.
Yeah, so every scene that starts with Cuomo is him going, ha! With his tooth, like, gleaming in the sunlight.
Yeah.
Just, and it's every time. Poor Cuomo is terrifying.
So, it's the other agent that's going after the girls. Now, we don't know in movie yet that these are Interpol agents. They are, spoiler alert, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. We think they're bad guys.
Yeah, but it's Inspector Jamal, and these are Interpol agents. They are trying to stop this smuggling ring. It is important, though, in the Bermuda scene, that you know that this other guy is an Interpol agent. Because what happens is, the girls find some scuba gear, and they're like, we don't want to wait until this guy comes back up from the fucking ship he is at a shipwreck looking for stuff at.
Yeah.
We're going to go down and meet this guy we were supposed to be meeting so we can save time. They go down to a sunken ship and meet this dude who straight up just looks like Aquaman with scuba gear on. He takes the doll and gives them the other one.
So just to make it clear, the very first doll that we exchange is in a sunken shipwreck off the coast of Bermuda that the girls scuba dive down to.
Now, he has the doll that they're getting in a chest in this pirate ship that is sunken, which means he didn't have it up on his regular boat where his diving gear is, where he should have been waiting for them. He is storing this Theodore doll
full of money
underwater in a sunken ship.
There's no place it could possibly be safer than underwater in a pirate treasure chest. Within easy swimming distance of the coast of Bermuda, a place that is famous for scuba divers.
So, the agent finds some scuba gear as well and follows them down there. Throughout this whole thing, there is a shark swimming around in the background that is sort of a danger.
Yeah, like a 30-foot-long ridiculous mega shark is swimming around down there.
At some point when they get out, the shark goes to attack the girls and straight up has that cartoon moment where it tries to eat Brittany and she's like holding the mouth open with her arms and legs.
Yes.
The doll gets dropped. The agent sees a child being attacked by a shark, looks at the doll, picks up the doll, smiles, and goes to leave.
Yes. Also, he has a giant knife drawn.
The Interpol agent, who is supposed to be a good guy, and we only think is a bad guy, sees child death happening and is like, nice, all I care about is this doll. Good day!
Also, it's not good enough. Getting the doll doesn't stop the whole situation. He needs to stop the girls, who have 23 other dolls.
Well, they have 11. 11 other dolls.
They have 11 other dolls on them at the moment, all full of illegal diamonds.
Yes.
And but he's like, whatever, they'll get eaten by sharks, my job's done.
Yep. So, I just needed to point out that the Interpol agent in this scene is straight up very okay with children being murdered.
I mean, to make it clear, the whole point of these characters is that they're supposed to appear to be bad guys until the very end of the movie, at which point it will be revealed that they are secretly good guys who have been trying to help the whole time. Except that the movie cheats it so hard that there's no way that that's true.
Yeah.
The movie tries to give you this, oh, it's all just misunderstandings, that they constantly try to snatch the children and attack penguins to get at them and throw things at them and never speak to them when given the opportunity, instead choosing to just keep trying for tackles.
Yes. So that's fucked up.
It's fucked. It's completely fucked up. And for when the movie's the end, go, oh no, they're just police officers. They're nice police officers who are here to help you. Fuck that. That guy let me get eaten by a shark.
Oh yeah. That guy saw a shark coming at me. And then when my doll dropped, he was like, good, this is all I wanted. Good day, sir.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the boys have been being pursued by Cuomo, and who has never done anything but whatever the metal toothed guy from, who was that on James Bond movies? The dude with the big metal mouth.
Jaws.
Yeah. Jaws. That's all he does, is just follow him around going, ha, teeth.
Yeah.
It's like, he isn't, at any point, he could have been like, hey, boys, you're smuggling diamonds.
Yep.
You probably don't know this, but you're smuggling diamonds.
But no, they have to, like, try and hide in the fucking cities that they're in.
Yeah. And also, at one point, they get dressed down by Jamal, who straight up just is like, if you two cannot do the job, I will bring in more men who can. Get out of here and don't fail me again. Which is not what an Interpol agent says to two of his guys.
No. All right. Anyway, so that's the ridiculous situation the girls get.
Yeah.
The boys go to Mexico City, where they trade their doll fairly easy peasy, no problem there.
Yeah, they have to stop at the Cluckin' Taco.
And they...
which is a weird restaurant that is closed.
They swap their doll. That's fine.
Real quick, I want to talk about this because this is the first time we see the mechanical doll swap machines that exist in this universe.
Yes.
The Cluckin' Taco is a closed taco restaurant. They put their doll on a little platform underneath a little sombrero, which Robo slams down on the doll, slides away, slides back, pops up again with the other doll in it. So this not only do they have the dolls constructed with the money in them, but also little doll transport machines all around the world.
Now, at least these, I'm saying that could have been a drop-off point that has been established for years.
Sure, for things that are roughly little doll-sized.
Yeah, for just small amounts of diamonds. Whatever.
Fine, that's fine, whatever.
But what I want to say is, so they give this doll and they get their own. That's fine.
I also want to say that there's no fucking way that there's a restaurant called the Cluckin' Taco in Mexico City.
Yeah, I mean, fucking maybe it's, in like...
If it was Mexico City, Kansas, sure.
No, I would say if you were on like the border of Mexico and California or Texas or something, you might find a place called the Cluckin' Taco because a bunch of idiot American tourists would go there.
You'd find one in Las Venturas in the Grand Theft Auto games.
Yes,
that's as far as I'm going.
In straight up Mexico City, you are not going to find something called the Cluck N apostrophe Taco.
Not a it's not even El Cluckin' Taco.
It's just the Cluck N Taco. Anyway.
Sure.
They get their doll. They then have a fiesta that breaks out in the middle of Mexico City, and they start doing the song, I like you very much.
This is the first musical number.
Now, it sounds like this is an old track that they're just using for the movie.
Yes.
Like, they've already recorded this in a previous, like, maybe in the 50s, and that's why it's so ridiculously racist, but they're still using it.
Yeah.
The thing I have with this is, so Cuomo's trying to get their doll while this is happening. The boys are so into this fiesta that they straight lose the doll and don't give a shit.
Yeah, they have no interest in the doll whatsoever. It turns out that one of Klaus's men is there and luckily has managed to intercept the doll and gives it back to the boys. But
it's not even one of Klaus's men. He's just like, he sees a doll and he's like, huh, and just throws it at him.
No, because he calls Klaus and Claudia right afterwards. He gets on a payphone and he's like, the boys were here and they made their drop. So it's the same guy. He's also the guy who welcomes them to town.
Yeah.
But they basically pop up into town. They get the drop exchange happens. And all of a sudden, a bunch of banditos ride through the middle of town on horses firing guns everywhere.
Which is part of the fiesta.
Part of a fiesta. Let's talk real quick. Mexico City appears to be about the size of Old Town San Diego. Just the one little district that's designed to look like old-timey Mexico.
Yes.
There's about 50 people.
Uh-huh.
And all of them are dressed in old-timey Mexican clothing.
Yes.
And then they ride through. Literally, evil-looking Mexican cowboys ride through town firing their guns wildly wildly in the air, and then some dude walks up to the chipmunks and is like, ah, do not worry, boys, it is our fiesta. And then they start singing the I, I, I song, where I guess they were all set for the chipmunks to be there because there are three women who need dance partners in a wagon,
yeah,
who dance with the boys so they can sing their song.
Yep.
And then they leave while the song's still playing. They get back in their balloon and fly away. And sure enough, the dude who greets them throws them the doll.
Yes.
So this is the first musical number, and it's dire and a little bit on the racist side and very old-fashioned.
Uh-huh.
But it's also... It makes you feel like the other musical numbers are going to be terrible. Don't worry, most of them are great.
They are amazing.
Yeah.
So we get at this point mostly like a montage of what's going on.
Like 3 hours long, and I don't give a shit.
I don't care. So we get a montage of where the boys and the girls are going.
Second musical number too.
Yeah. Now the boys have a very easy route. So they're going from Mexico City. They're going to go to
Machu Picchu.
They go to Peru and they go to Rio de Janeiro. They have a route that you're like, oh, okay. Going down South America.
Yeah, they get Central and South America, and their route actually makes sense until up to a point.
Well, yes.
Their first three or four locations. Now, John's getting ready to tell you the actual routes they both took, but real quick here, I want to talk about the song they're singing, because this is the first original number in this thing, the Hey, Don't You Know That We're Off to See the World song.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little overwrought. It's kind of surprising. Why are our hearts beating so fast? Why is there suddenly a brand new hope inside us that will surely last?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of generic 80s soft Michael Jackson style ballady pop stuff happening.
I mean, it's a good song.
It is, but it's also it is a fine song. But it's also the song that plays over while we start seeing these incredible routes, which, John, please tell me all about it.
Okay, so while I was watching this, I wrote down what was going on. Mm-hmm. So for the boys, we see them hit Mexico City. They make a drop-off in Machu Picchu.
It's in Machu Picchu. It's not in a well-populated Peruvian city. It's in Machu Picchu, the ruins.
They straight go to some fucking ruin, drop a doll onto a pillar, which then goes down and comes back up with a different doll.
They basically have some sort of robotic doll exchange program built into an ancient stone plinth in Machu Picchu.
Yeah. They go to Rio. There is a scene where they are going through some jungle, but they don't make a doll. And then the next time we see them, they're off in what looks like Morocco.
Yeah. They go to Rio, but we never see them do the doll drop. You're right. They just fly over the big Jesus statue.
Yeah. So the next time we see them do a drop is Morocco.
So they fly all the way down South America, and then they fly across the ocean to the north of Africa?
Yes.
All right, sure.
The girls, however, went from Bermuda to Dover.
Which we see the white cliffs of Dover. They don't stop there.
Nope. They then make a drop in Holland,
mm-hmm,
and Switzerland. Then there's a bunch of like montage things where we don't see them drop off dolls, but we know that they are in London, Paris. They're at the Leaning Tower and somewhere in Germany doing like Oktoberfest type shit.
Yes.
So they straight do the full Europe.
They do full Europe while the boys just have to go down South America, which only has like three stops.
Yeah. But, at this point, after, in Morocco, and then they go to Venice.
Yeah,
because
that's right.
They're in the canals.
Yeah.
Then the two of them meet up in Athens.
Yes, both of them have a drop to do in Athens, or they're just both there. We don't know.
Stop in Athens, and I can't imagine they stop unless they're doing a drop.
It could be. Who knows? I mean, I don't think either of them does a full 12 stops during the film.
They do not finish the route because they come back and still have some dolls.
Well, they still have some of the wrong dolls.
Yeah.
So they meet in Athens, and the whole time they're being pursued by Cuomo and what's-his-face.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of story beats happening, but this is all happening to the course of the song.
Yeah, it's just a montage of places they're going.
So now the six of them stop, and they meet up in Athens, where they have some pleasantries. They're just like, how you doing? Oh, we've made six of our drops. How about you? We've made seven of our drops. Hey, that's great. I feel like we're a little slowed down, though, says Alvin, because we're such big celebrity rock stars that
we keep getting mobbed by people.
We keep getting mobbed by fans, he says, trying to make his hat look cool. And Brittany's having none of it. She's like, oh, the same thing happened to us. And I'm like, why are they doing this? Well, I guess the two of them just can't help but lie to each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, both Brittany and Alvin are like
just too type A
compulsive liars.
Yeah,
that are they have a weird need to be famous.
Yes,
like the other ones in both the Chipmunks and Chipettes, while they are acquiring fame and money and whatnot, they don't have that as their primary goal.
Yeah, and this is a situation where you'd expect Alvin to Simon to just be standing behind Alvin, and he's like, "We've been getting mobbed by fans of our rock and roll music." No, we haven't.
No, that's wrong.
That's it hasn't been happening. No one's actually recognized us yet.
So the problem with this is you would imagine at some point, like, both Alvin and Brittany are going to try and do their solo career, because they're the type who are like, well, fuck you, I don't want to share the spotlight with anybody. It's all me.
Yeah, I need these two other chipmunks to make me look good. But I just feel like at some point in the movie, that should have actually happened. We should have at least seen one scene of random fans being like, holy shit, the chipmunks, what are you doing in Morocco?
Yeah, but no, we never get that. No one ever recognizes
them. No, that never happens. Instead, people are just sort of, unless the one time that someone recognizes them is the New York or the Mexico City guy,
maybe,
who's just like, hello boys, I was expecting you, and you're just like, oh, okay, but he's expecting them because he had to make a doll of them.
Yeah,
that's it. Anyway, they can't, sorry.
Yeah, this meeting in Athens, though, starts the best song in this movie. The best song in this movie.
Definitely the second best of all the songs in this movie.
The second best, but the best song in this movie, because it is both the first and second best song in this movie.
Oh, now you're taking it too far. I'm willing to accept that the two songs that we both think are the best song are equally really, really good, but I'm not giving you slots one and two for this one song.
So, Alvin says that not only are they better at delivering dolls, they are better at rocking and rolling.
Yes, to which Brittany is like, oh yeah, can you back that up? And he's like, well, of course I can. Come on, boys. And Theodore, who is trying to order some couscous and some dolma, which for some reason he calls kalashi donuts?
No, I don't know.
I think he probably says kalashi dolma, and he almost gets the order right. But it sounds like he says, I'll have one large couscous and two kalashi donuts. Which I think is because the voice actor for Theodore had no idea what dolma are. And so he was just like, I'll just say donuts, whatever.
What?
And what's weird is that the animation of it is beautiful. A wonderful plate of two dolma on a big plate of couscous is put out right in front of him. And he's like, ah, perfect. Look at them grape leaves stuffed with seasoned rice. That's exactly what I wanted. Thank you.
Oh, no, I am pulled away from it.
Oh, the weird thing is, this is the crazy thing. As they're getting pulled away for the song to start, we get a beautiful, heartfelt, one-line conversation between Jeanette and Simon.
Yes.
Where, like, they're both being tugged on as hard as they can by Alvin and Brittany, who want to go off and have a musical number, and Simon's like, this is ridiculous. We have to keep these two apart.
Yeah, they are the most poisonous, toxic personalities. If these two were in a relationship, it would be the most explosive, terrible thing ever.
And Jeanette's just kind of like resigned, and she's just sort of nodding, like, yeah, I know, it's awful. But the moment that they are successfully tugged away, Simon and Jeanette both just turn straight up into backup singers and are 100% on board.
Oh, yeah. The second that the song starts, they're like, oh, fuck you, we are gonna rock this shit.
Oh, my God, I gotta run as fast as I can while singing I Am Simon.
The whole thing happens
at the Acropolis.
At the fucking Acropolis. And the fact of this happening there is interesting, if only because Dave is also in Athens.
Yes, when they're charging by to start the song, they knock over a tent that he's under.
Yeah, and he's buying presents for the boys.
I want to get something nice for the boys because they're stuck at home while I'm here working, says a man in Athens near the Acropolis with a camera around his neck.
Yeah.
And then he gets knocked over. He's like, wait a minute. Those green blurs that shot by, they couldn't have been. I better check.
And he doesn't get to actually see them because the agents get knocked over the Acropolis into him.
Well, so the chipmunks start running all over the Acropolis singing the song The Boys and Girls of Rock and Roll.
Which is so good.
It's a great song, and it's hilariously performed. And the thing it always draws attention to for me is the difference in the look of the chipmunks versus the chipettes. Because the chipmunks are, again, wearing floor-length t-shirts with turtlenecks.
Yes.
The girls are all dressed like 80s pastiches. So Jeanette, for example, straight up looks like Olivia Newton-John in the Let's Get Physical video. Not Jeanette, I'm sorry. Brittany looks like that. Jeanette kind of looks like a put-upon. She kind of looks like Goldie Hawn in, what's that Kurt Russell movie? She was Gone Overboard or whatever.
Overboard.
So she's kind of got that look to her where she's sort of frumpy chic. And Eleanor is, for some reason, wearing a giant green tie. She looks like
she's in a schoolgirl outfit.
She's in a schoolgirl outfit. She looks like she's dressed up as a sexy Rodney Dangerfield.
No, man, she's just in your standard 80s schoolgirl outfit. She's got the little pleated skirt and the tie and everything.
Well, the end result is that they're all dressed individually. They all have like bits on their clothing that moves around when they're dancing and stuff. So like when Brittany's
well, it's
doing
all clothes that reflect their personality, but it's also things that give them a full range of movement,
a full range of like leg movement, and the fact that they can when they do hip stuff, like their skirts can fly around and like sparks come off them and stuff. The boys are all dressed like weird snakes, and they have to dance like weird snakes.
Yeah, so they're mostly just like wiggling, and they can do like arm dance stuff.
Yeah,
but there's no point where they can really use their like legs to show off dance moves.
Yeah,
so all their dance moves have to be very upper body.
They're either upper body or they're wriggling their entire body again like weird snakes. That's all they. There's one scene in particular with Theodore and Simon dancing with each other because they're backup dancers.
I'm just imagining an anthropomorphic snake dressed in a floor-length shirt who's like, I say,
wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. I look nothing like those chipmunks. How dare you? I shall eat one of them anon. But no, they like Theodore and Simon basically look like if a cartoon letter I did a dance.
Yes. So they go off, they have their thing, they go their separate ways.
Their dance is amazing, though. There's one part where they start flashing in and out of existence because of how strong they're dancing.
Yeah, they're just like blinking like they got hit.
In a video game, yeah, like they took a little damage. And then Cuomo and What's-His-Face show up with their most menacing poses of the entire film. Cuomo pops in like late at night in the Acropolis, he peeks out from around a pillar and just goes, with his teeth all out and one claw-like hand extended towards these boys.
Yeah.
It's insane. And then they all escape in hot air balloons. I say escape, but they have no idea they're being pursued.
Yeah. So the boys are headed off to Istanbul as their next stop. The girls are headed to Cairo. In Cairo, they are attacked by agents that Jamal has sent out different people to go get them.
Yes.
Because he's like,
you two have failed me.
I'm going to have the Sultan of Cairo.
Who is a nine-year-old boy?
The nine-year-old Sultan of Cairo is going to capture the Chipettes.
I mean, what is going on? It's Egypt was a modernized country in the late 80s.
Nope.
I mean, it wasn't great. It's pretty famous for not being great at the time, but there were no little boys in Sultan pants running the country.
Yep, but no. At this point in time in this weird universe where diamonds are illegal, the Sultan, the boy Sultan of Cairo.
Not the boy Sultan of Egypt, mind you.
No, the boy Sultan of Cairo has decided to capture these Chipettes as a favor to Jamal, but he's going to keep the girls, deliver the dolls, but the girls are going into his harem.
Yes, because he thinks Brittany would make a wonderful child bride. I mean, this is the most insane thing. How did this play in Egypt, where they were like, wait, are they saying that we have an insane boy king? I don't understand what this is. Why didn't they just set this someplace that is still a sultanate? There's more than one of them. There's a whole set of emirates still. That's what the UAE is, and Brunei is a sultanate. There's plenty of places where you could still put a sultan if you wanted. Why did they choose Egypt? Why did they make him nine? He's only in one scene.
Well, because it would be super creepy if it was an adult sultan. He's like, I will marry that nine-year-old chipmunk.
Keep that nine-year-old chipmunk in my... It's still super creepy.
Oh, also super weird to note, the boy Sultan of Cairo is voiced by the person who's like Bart Simpson.
Yes, yeah.
So having Bart Simpson be like, I'm going to marry that chipmunk, real weird.
So, meanwhile, Dave almost managed to find out that the boys are going around the world while he was caught up to them in Athens, but because the two Interpol agents got shoved down a staircase by magic dancing sparks and fell into him, he gets hit by two rolling Interpol agents falling down the Acropolis, and then this all happens off screen, get up, dust themselves off, and go their separate ways without addressing each other even slightly.
They do not say a word, they just get up and are like, good day, sirs, and are gone.
Because all you see is Dave walking off going, I could have sworn I heard the boys doing one of their weird trademark musical numbers.
But that wouldn't happen. They'd never do a musical number without me getting money for it.
Also, I just got hit by two gentlemen, and when I stood up, all they did was menace at me and threaten to tackle me with their gnarled claw-like hands. All right, yeah, you guys have a good day, too.
So the Cairo scene.
Oh, that is. The Cairo scene is deep, crazy doo-doo.
They... the girls are now dressed in your standard I Dream of Genie
silky see-through like blousey things.
Yeah, those like the blousey arm stuff and the veils and whatnot. They're in your classic genie outfits.
Yeah, and also your classic genie harem room. Bunch of like red and purple pillows and thin diaphanous veily things.
In order to escape, they need to find their dolls and get out.
Yes.
They find the dolls, and they are guarded by a ton of snakes.
A ton of hooded cobras.
And, before this, they had been given a gift of a baby penguin?
Yes, yeah. A little box is delivered to them, which contains a terrarium containing a tiny penguin wearing a locket.
This is important, because you open the locket, and it is a picture of this baby penguin and its parents, which then immediately raises the question, where did this penguin get a locket with a picture of its parents?
Is that just extra cruelty on the part of the Sultan of Cairo?
Yeah, he was like, hold on, before I steal this baby penguin, I gotta get a picture of it with its parents, then I'm gonna take it away.
Fashion a locket.
I'm gonna give a heart-shaped locket to this baby penguin, put that picture in the locket, and then give the penguin to my new child bride.
I've been keeping the penguin around in the eventuality that I would find some random chipmunk child brides.
So, the Jeanette and Brittany are going to attempt to use music to soothe the savage beast.
Yeah, which is Jeanette's dumb idea.
While Jeanette goes off. Yeah. Or not Jeanette.
Brittany goes off. Oh, no,
Eleanor goes off, and she's like, I gotta go get something real quick. She's gonna go get that penguin.
Well, the implication in the film is that she's gonna go raid the kitchens to get enough food for their trip.
Yeah, she just says, I'm gonna be back, but she comes back with a cooler, and she's like, oh, it's got snacks and stuff.
Which everyone's like, fine, because you're the Theodore of our party. Although there's no evidence of that, ever.
No.
There's no point in this movie at all where Eleanor does anything other than care about a penguin, so there's no part where she has her, like, stereotypes reinforced.
So, they have a dance number where it's Jeanette and Brittany dancing with snakes in a, I'm going to say, way too sexualized way.
Entirely. There's a lot of rubbing snakes between their legs. I'm just going to say it.
I'm going to say right now, the song is, it's a fine song.
It's Getting Lucky.
But it's called Getting Lucky.
Yeah.
And it's two underage girls essentially singing to snakes going like, hey, come fuck me.
Yeah. Well, the chorus of the song is hey you, tell me what I have to do to get lucky with you.
Yes.
That's the chorus that they're singing to all these, like, excited dancing snakes.
So.
Now, they already know how to dance with weird snakes because, of course, they've spent years in a career rivalry with the chipmunks who all dance like weird snakes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, none of these snakes dressed in floor-length cossacks.
Cossacks? They're dressed like 18th century Russian people?
Yeah.
Cossacks.
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 They're all dressed like human tailbones. So they sing their way past these snakes with this song about wanting to fuck snakes.
Yep. And then and then they use two of the snakes.
Just tie them together.
And use them as a rope to get out.
And the snakes are both like, yeah, this is fine. You can do this to us because
I'm
pretty...
You've given me a snake boner, so I'm fine with this.
I'm fine with you tying me to another snake, which would definitely break me. And then using my teeth to grapple out of this building, because I'm pretty sure we're going to get laid later.
Jesus Christ.
This scene is fucked up. At least the nice thing is that we never see the little boy Sultan again.
No. So they escape. They have to take this penguin to its parents in Antarctica.
They're in Cairo right now. So they're in Egypt, and they're like, well, our next stop is, I forget. I don't even know where they're supposed to be going.
They don't
next.
Even say it.
They never say. But they're just like, all right, well, we'll go out of our way real quick to go to Antarctica to drop off this penguin, because Eleanor has diagnosed the penguin as dying because it doesn't have its mom.
Well, mostly they're like, this penguin doesn't look good. I'm sure the mom would know what to do.
Yeah, the answer isn't to keep the penguin in a freezer. This is one of those weird things that they're doing where they're like, well, penguins are from Antarctica, right? So they have to be kept cold all the time or they'll definitely die. They're animals that live in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
This is inaccurate. You can keep a penguin pretty much wherever. They don't need to be frozen. They're just adapted to live in frozen environments.
So they take a detour from Cairo to Antarctica
over the course of what appears to be about an hour and a half. And the reason I'm saying that is because they're flying along as they escape Egypt. They're like flying over the pyramids or whatever. And Brittany goes, I'm hungry. I'm going to look in that cooler. And, you know, Eleanor's like, no, don't. Which is weird, because what's Eleanor's plan exactly?
Yeah.
Like she's going to smuggle the penguin to where? Why would she, and why would it be a secret that she's doing it? Is she gonna secretly steer the balloon to Antarctica at night by herself? What?
Well, maybe, I think her plan was she was just going to keep the penguin for herself.
Oh, okay, it's going to be her, maybe she was going to eat the penguin.
But, shit, that's my snack.
Don't you eat my penguin. But then they pop open the cooler, and there's a sickly looking penguin, and Eleanor's like, well, she misses her mama. And then these girls, who have never had a mom that we know of, they've had like adopted people who they've lived with.
Yeah, they've been orphaned since they were wee tiny chipmunks.
Yeah, sing a song about how much moms are important.
Yeah, they're like, moms are great. They know all about how to take care of you.
The song is probably one of the worst songs in the movie. That's an original. It's my mother, that's who I need. That song.
It's all like, my mother's my best friend, and
yeah,
she's always there for me.
This whole penguin and mom song thing is basically because they knew that some girls would also watch this movie. They were 80s men writing these movies, and they were like, well, we got to put in some woman shit. The girls are moms now. The end.
The weird part of this is, during the song, it gives us glimpses into what's going on with this penguin's family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what's going on with this penguin's family? Because it certainly is that they live in a goddamn house with cribs and blankets and pillows.
And a fireplace. I mean, it's every, because there's a chimney outside their house at one point. And their house is made of ice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an ice house, but inside is made of wood, a, like, actual baby crib, and there are blankets and pillows in it.
What we're establishing in this film is that although the penguin can only speak in little squeaks and noises, and so can all of its penguin family, they are an intelligent, anthropomorphized penguin species.
That have the ability to not only create a house, so they have architecture, carpentry, definitely weaving of some kind to make a blanket and pillows.
Yeah. Either that, or they could just buy all that crap on the 1980s internet. But they can build things. They form strong family relationships and permanent housing situations. Like, do these penguins dive for fish? Do they go in the water and swim around?
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure they go into town, have a day job that they do, and then go to the market and buy fish.
Well, what we're establishing here is that penguins are the only species on Earth that we can say for sure that operates in the same sort of proto-human state that chipmunks do.
Yeah.
It's chipmunks and penguins that are the two. And then penguins, of course, don't speak English, but neither do chipmunks normally, unless they're born in Australia or New York.
Well, yeah, because you've got to be born in an English-speaking country as a chipmunk to speak English.
That is right. Otherwise, they'd speak some weird penguin language like these penguins do.
Yeah, that's it for chipmunks, either English or penguin.
Well, we don't
that's
see
their
them.
Option.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So at this point, they sing this song about like how moms are great, and then finally Brittany, I guess, caves and is like, all right, fine. How do we get to Antarctica?
So,
well, south, Brittany. You go south.
The big thing here is, because they start going off course, the agents are like telling Klaus and Claudia, oh, it looks like they figured out that they have whatever, and they're trying to like keep your money and diamonds or whatever for themselves. So they send out operatives to then kill/take the dolls back from the girls, who go to Antarctica and try to take the stuff from the girls.
They attack the girls, and their attack is repelled by penguins,
who throw snowballs at them.
Yes.
So penguins also can apparently make snowballs.
Not only make them, but throw them. Normally, yeah, throwing stuff is pretty much restricted to the higher primates.
Oh, yeah.
Here we see some super intelligent housing penguins that can throw snowballs. During the confrontation, one of the dolls gets ripped, and so the girls learn the secret of what's inside the dolls.
They're like, oh my god, this one's full of diamonds. And then they cut open one of the other dolls. This one's full of money.
We have to warn the boys.
No wonder people have been after us this whole time and trying to attack us. It's because we've got cash.
I just figured it was because they wanted to marry us into weird child bride relationships.
Meanwhile, the boys.
We gotta talk about them boys.
The boys are in
back in town.
The boys are taking, remember earlier?
From the movie, from the video game.
They're taking the shortcut through Fiji.
All right, let's talk about this. Fiji is impossible to be a shortcut in real life.
The
Fiji,
only time Fiji is a shortcut is if you are going straight from like Sydney up to California, maybe.
It's still not a shortcut. It's still
it's not a shortcut. It's the shortest route.
It's the shortest route, but it's not a shortcut. It is a place you stop on the way for some reason. I don't know why you would. It's not like it's especially equipped to handle an airplane that can fly from Sydney to California, but it's never, ever a shortcut. It's in the middle of the ocean. It is very isolated. It's very far from anything else.
Yeah.
It's a little tiny island, and it's impossible for it to be a shortcut or a good idea as a stopping location for someone in a hot air balloon.
Yeah, while in a video game, you might be able to say this maybe makes sense as a level thing,
mm-hmm.
in an actual around-the-world thing, saying that they went from Istanbul and then were using the Fiji shortcut. Do you know how far Fiji is from Istanbul? Because it's real fucking far.
It's real fucking far from anything, let alone Istanbul.
Yeah.
It's not the most remote island in the world, but it's up there.
Oh, yeah. So they are camping in Fiji.
Or islands. Yeah, they're camping in Fiji, where for some reason, and for the first time ever, Theodore is afraid of the dark.
Yeah, he still believes in the boogeyman. And
he thinks the boogeyman is endemic to Fiji.
Yeah, sure, why not? That's where the boogeyman lives.
Yeah.
But he gets stolen in the middle of the night and turned into
a child prince.
Like, he is their missing prince of plenty.
Yes. So, and by there, we mean Fiji tribespeople.
The Fiji native tribesmen, and we get the most ridiculous, shitty, racist scene ever, where Alvin tries to trade for Theodore by doing the worst, like, we have heap big wampum, we give you shirts, and this make big music noise.
Like 'em plenty, cluck cluck, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, don't worry, I've got negotiation skills.
So, again, we're on Fiji. We're not in 1860s America and in a cartoon. Well, it's still a cartoon, but he's not a racist from New York at the time in the 1860s in America. He's a chipmunk on Fiji in 1987.
And he decides that obviously these...
All natives talk like this.
If you're a native anywhere, obviously you're going to know that fucking if I talk to you like I'm an F troop, then you'll get it.
Yeah, just give him some of that good old gun smoke language. Hey, want some heap big t-shirt?
We smoke them peace pipe. Oh my God.
That's what he tries. And if for a second it looks like it works, but thankfully, instead, he gets dressed in a loincloth and chained to a wall.
Yeah, and then their options are death or slaves to the Prince of Plenty.
Yes, so they have to become Theodore's slaves. At this point, Theodore is thankfully more or less absent from the film for a couple of minutes, because otherwise, you know, they could just address him directly and be like, hey, they've made us your slaves.
Can you just not?
Can you tell him to stop it? But, you know, Theodore instead is off in some room by himself eating fruit at an alarming pace.
But this is also where we find out that... Simon understands the language of them.
Yes.
Because when they're talking about it, they're like, oh, these people are saying that either we die or we become slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So he speaks native Fijian, but not only that, when they're out collecting mushrooms for him, they stumble into a cave full of ruined writings.
Yes, yeah. There's all these like old timey, or not old timey, I shouldn't say, but like
hieroglyphic type.
Archaeological Fijian tribal hieroglyphics.
And he speaks it and is like, "Oh, they're gonna sacrifice the Prince of Plenty at the full moon. That's tonight."
Yeah. So,
and of course, Alvin's like, "Over my dead body." And then we are shown all three of them tied to pillars over a crocodile pit.
Yeah, you had to say that, didn't you?
I think you mean over our dead bodies.
Yeah, come on, Simon. Instead of being snarky about it, what you should have done was interrupted Alvin when he was talking about heap big wampum if you spoke the language.
Yeah, when he was being a huge douche, you'd been like, just slap him and go, look, I fucking speak the language. Hey, guys.
I'll tell you what, I'll trade you this chipmunk for that chipmunk over there. You can have this one.
This one is definitely your sacrificial Prince of Plenty, let me tell you.
Way better choice.
So yeah, they're gonna get sacrificed, and the the actual chief of this village before they die, wants to hear Woolly Bully.
Yes, he would like to hear the doo-wop hit, Woolly Bully, the early rock and roll classic.
Of course, he requests it as Worry Burry because...
Yes, Worry Burry, he says.
We cannot have anything on Fiji be not racist.
Yeah. Racist against what, exactly? I don't even know what these tribes people are supposed to represent. They're just made up insane tribes people. So they want to hear Worry Burry.
And indeed they do.
And the boys sing Woolly Bully to them as the ropes that they're suspended from are lit on fire. And they just keep singing Woolly Bully. And they are so loud, and there is so much loud saxophone music accompanying them from, you know, let's go ahead and not make fun of musical conventions. That's fine.
That's fine.
But this is the thing. The musical conventions in the film are so loud that they attract the attention of the Chipettes, who rescue them.
Yeah.
They're wow, there's loud saxophone music coming from over there.
Yeah, the Chipettes from Antarctica were like, we need to find the boys, because they're probably also in danger. They have these dolls.
Mm-hmm.
The Chipettes, though, should have no idea where they are, especially given that
they mentioned
Fiji isn't one of the drop-off points. They're doing a shortcut,
yeah,
which means they should be going, even if they memorized what 12 locations the boys had to go to, they could be like, oh, well, we'll meet them wherever, because that's going to be their next drop-off location. But no, they decide that apparently from Antarctica, the shortest distance is to Fiji.
So that's where they go, and wouldn't you know it, they find the boys all dressed in loincloths. By the way, this is the new uniforms for the film, because the film for the rest of it has the girls in their diaphanous veily harem outfits and the boys in loincloths.
Yes.
That's the whole rest of the movie.
So they get saved from the islanders and they fly back to LA.
Yeah, they fly to LAX for some reason. I'm not 100% sure why they'd bother going to the airport in their balloons.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we need to get back and, like, warn the authorities, I guess, but the best way to do this is to fly into LAX.
So they hot air balloon to LAX, where Klaus and Claudia are there with more men who immediately start pursuing them. And at this point, they're being chased in loincloths and diaphanous harem outfits through LAX's luggage spaces by a whole bunch of various Eurotrash and Interpol agents and nonsense, and now the best song in the movie plays.
Oh, really? They play Boys and Girls of Rock and Roll again?
No, instead
I don't remember that.
No, they play the best song in the movie, the one that sounds kind of like a lower pitched, or not lower pitched, I guess, because it's chipmunk voices, but a smoother toned Bonnie Tyler song is what this whole thing sounds like. They play Diamond Dolls, the best song in the movie.
No.
And they're running around to Diamond Dolls. Dave comes to meet them at the airport, I think.
Dave is flying to LAX
arriving.
When they get there.
And he sees them running around in the airport and being pursued by all these people, and he's like, my boys! And then Jamal shows up and is like, hello, I am Inspector Jamal. I will help you. Come with me. And like they get in a car and go, and there's a whole road chase.
Meanwhile, Mrs. Miller is on the way to LAX because she's going to pick up Dave.
Yes.
And she is the world's worst driver. She is your horrible old person stereotype, where she like sees the exit for LAX but misses it and then starts driving on the wrong side of the road on the freeway.
Yeah, no, her scene's insane, and she's also yelling at everybody. It's a weird scene. It just makes you dislike her because she's like straight up being super dangerous.
Oh yeah.
Also, she's taking curlers out of her hair and looking at a map and drinking coffee. So she's got a lot going on, and she's also singing the first Chipmunks hit.
Yeah, the Witch Doctor, was the very first Chipmunk song.
Yes, the very first song.
So we get a reference to that.
Yeah, so she's singing that, and then I guess at some point car chase comes to a head.
Because of Mrs. Miller driving the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
she almost slams into Klaus and Claudia, who have kidnapped these kids.
That's right, yes.
And so they go flying into a pole, and Mrs. Miller is fine.
Yeah, but she gets
just down. Like every time there's someone who's a horrible driver, like the drunk driver is fine and then everyone else is fucked up.
Yes.
Same thing. Mrs. Miller, her rear view mirror gets like slightly busted, whereas their car is wrecked.
Yeah, and she gets out to start yelling at them. So
and then all the police show up and Inspector Jamal is there, and
he's like, Klaus and Claudia, I have looked forward to meeting you.
Which is weird, because they're in a big fucking mansion with a huge F for Furstein on it in L.A. You'd think if you had any evidence of their wrongdoing,
you'd just go get them.
You'd be like, oh yeah, they're in that huge goddamn mansion where I have a double agent in their house. I know where they live.
I have their address, but apparently he's been having a hard time catching them personally.
Whatever. So we save the boys and the girls. They go run up and hug Dave.
Which, why do the girls give one solitary fuck about Dave?
Well, the fact that Dave is there, I guess. I mean, you just got kidnapped. You see a familiar face, you're going to be like, oh, thank God.
I guess, but it's like, he's like, oh, all the kids, yay, I rescued. He has no relationship to the Chipettes.
Well, he has some relationship to the Chipettes. He would like to also exploit them
he's
for money.
He's dimly aware of them.
He is like, that is another
one time. Band. One time 20 years ago, or a couple of years ago, he threatened to sue them because they were calling themselves the Chipmunks. That's the full extent of his relationship.
Hey, they lived with him for like an episode.
Yeah, I'm sure that was some court-ordered thing from one of those courts that like loves 80s sitcom plots.
One of those courts who's like, you're going to be his butler.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like their name, huh? Well, you're going to hate living with them. Court is adjourned.
Woohoo!
What's in next? Some dude who needs to live on a houseboat for a year to learn a lesson about values. I love the 80s.
So they get rescued. They all get into a car with Mrs. Miller and drive off. And we end the movie with Alvin being pissed off that they didn't get any money. He's like, oh, come on, there's got to be a reward. We just saved like millions of dollars of diamonds and cash. We stopped a huge smuggling ring. We helped Interpol. Where is our goal? Like, where's our cut of that? And, you know, I'm sort of on Alvin's side here.
A little bit, although it's probably cost him a tremendous amount. It's cost Interpol an insane amount of money to send weird goons out to catch him.
Yeah, well, that's Interpol's dumb idiot problem. They're like, oh, instead of just being like, we called the local police of, like, Mexico City, had them show up, stop the boys, and go, hey, guys, you need to stop for a minute, then show up, get the dolls, and arrest these people. We instead decided to send our most menacing perverts to go attempt to growl their way into tackling them.
Get me the scariest tacklers we got.
Give me your weirdest pervert agents you have. I want ones that speak entirely in growls and have claw hands. Those are the guys that I'll have send after children.
Cuomo, get in here. Yes, sir. How can I help you, sir? You need to catch some boys. They're in tremendous danger and they're traveling around the world in a hot air balloon. Okay, sir. I'll go get them immediately. That shouldn't be too difficult, right? All right, but Cuomo, I can't have you speaking to them. It's desperately important that instead of speaking to them, you scare the hell out of them so that they surrender faster.
Look, I'm a child psychologist. I know what I'm talking about.
So when you get near them, I want you to just do your best, like, terrifying zombie impersonation at them. Look all Solomon Grundy. Like
just
this,
make
sir.
Sure they see that gold tooth. Yeah. Kids love gold
kids
teeth.
Kids love gold teeth. Obviously, these kids are traveling with a lot of diamonds. They're going to love gold. They're going to come right to your tooth. It's going to be like moths to a flame.
They're going
to
see that and be like, gold.
And you, other guy, whose name no one can remember. Look, the dolls are the most important possible thing, all right? So if the girls are, just say, as a random, crazy hypothetical, about to be eaten by sharks, you leave them alone because that's just nature. That's sharks eating chipmunks. It happens all the time. That's nature. But on the other hand, dolls full of diamonds sinking to the bottom of the Bermuda Ocean, that is bad juju. So you got to get that doll. You know, you only need to rescue like one of the chipmunks, chipettes at most.
Also, I love that they never go after the people who are getting the diamonds. Like, you'd think if diamond smuggling is a crime, buying smuggled diamonds would be a crime, and they would arrest the people who are buying
them.
Well,
we know for a fact that everyone that they're exchanging diamonds with is like a robot machine that just exchanges dolls.
Well, I mean, except for the one guy in Bermuda who is definitely a scuba diver guy.
Well, he's underwater, John. How are you going to get him?
Oh, he's in international waters. They have no jurisdiction here under the sea. They've got to try and get in good with Triton if they want to catch that guy.
Ocean law will claim him.
I'm going to have to find the boy sultan of the ocean.
He'll make him walk the plank and then he'll shiver his timbers, but good.
God damn it. The biggest, craziest, dumb thing on this is the time scale, though.
Yes, because they're in hot air balloons, which, you know, aren't fast.
Even if, let's assume that these hot air balloons are going like hundreds of miles an hour for no reason.
Yeah.
These are magical hot air balloons.
Unbelievably fast, quantum-powered, hovering hot air balloons.
That's the timeline on this is nuts. The amount of time it would take for someone even going fairly quickly to get from LA to Bermuda to Dover to Holland, then down through through like Germany and France and Italy.
Each place they're only stopping long enough for a musical number. So, I mean, we don't have to worry about them spending the night in like Germany and France.
Sure we do. We see them spending the night in Fiji. They obviously sleep.
Yeah, but they don't sleep everywhere they go because you can get in and out of Mexico City in about 20 minutes.
Not everywhere they go. But still, the amount of time it takes you to go through there, go to Athens, to Cairo, to Antarctica, to Fiji, to L.A.
Yeah, Fiji to L.A. is probably the single largest distance they travel.
I don't know. I think Cairo to Antarctica is the farthest.
That's pretty fucking ridiculous, but Fiji's in the southern hemisphere on the other side of the world from
L.A. Yeah, you know what else is in the southern hemisphere? Antarctica.
Yeah, but Cairo is closer to Antarctica than L.A. is to Fiji. I'm not sure.
No, it definitely is not.
I actually have no idea because I don't know what part of Antarctica they go to, and neither do they. They go to Antarctica and are immediately at the penguin's house. Antarctica is a continent. It's like saying, where does this penguin live? Europe? All right, let's go to Europe. Done.
Done. We found it.
We found it. There it is. Nice. Here, right here in scenic Europe.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, the little baby penguin was like, oh, yeah, I live at like 187 West 1st Street on Antarctica.
I live on 69 Nice Street.
Nice.
They just go to, the penguin district of Antarctica. No problem.
Yeah. But yeah.
Also, did you ever notice that they never, ever, on their vast tour around the world, go to either Australia or Africa? And also, they never see Asia.
Egypt's in Africa.
Okay,
Morocco's
fine.
In Africa.
Egypt, okay, they go to North Africa. They never go to Sub-Saharan Africa. They never go to Australia. And they don't even touch Asia.
No. There is zero diamond wanters in Asia.
You would think that there'd probably be a China drop, right?
You would you'd think that. But I'm almost certain that they were like, well, it's the 80s. We hate China.
We hate China, and we're scared of Japan. Don't put drops there.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no Russia drop.
Yeah, that's true. There isn't a Russia drop either. I would have figured in their around-the-world tour, they pretty much just go to South America and Northern Europe, and then they briefly stop off in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, it's basically Northern Africa, Europe, and South America. They go to Antarctica, but it's not part of the drop.
They weren't supposed to go there, which is weird because there are soldiers waiting for them. Can you imagine how hard it was to get the soldiers to Antarctica to intercept them? You know how hard it is to get to Antarctica?
Very.
It's extremely hard. You can only go a couple times during the year, and you have to do it by boat. There's no airport.
You have to do it by boat or by hot air balloon.
Hot air balloon, yeah. Like to get to McMurdo Station, the one place in Antarctica that has permanent round the year people living, you have to take a boat from New Zealand, and it's a really scary boat ride because it's really stormy waters that are super cold and there's nothing around.
Yeah.
But you can get there by hot air balloon and find a penguin's house. No problem. It's easy. Yeah.
Easy peasy.
It's cartoon physics, but it's just insane.
No, the amount of time they spend is... It makes me wonder, how long is Dave gone?
Oh, Dave's gone for like a year.
Because the amount of time it would take you to hot air balloon to these places is forever.
Well, I mean, even Dave's little mini vacation he goes on doesn't make any sense. From Paris to Athens? What's he doing?
I don't know. It's never said. They never say what business he is doing.
No, there's no... We don't address that. We don't really resolve much. We have the one scene where the boys and girls argue over who are the boys and or girls of rock and roll, but that never really gets resolved either. We don't know who's the best at rocking by the end of this.
Yeah. Yeah, so the movie's insane.
Insane, but it's also over. This is the end of it.
This is the end. I'm sure it's been like 3 hours now that we have talked about this movie. We've talked about this for longer
minutes.
Than the movie is.
90 minutes or so. We've talked about it for almost exactly as long as the movie is.
Let's get into the very end of this. Jeff, I want you to give me your favorite thing in this movie.
Oh, no problem, John. My favorite part of the movie is the best song in the movie, Diamond Dolls. The Diamond Dolls song that they sing during the airport escape is definitely the best part of the movie. Yeah,
that's
real easy. What would you say is your favorite part of the movie?
Well, my favorite part of the movie is the best song in the movie, which is The Boys and Girls of Rock and Roll, which they sing while they're in Athens.
Oh, okay. That seems reasonable. I mean, it's wrong, but I'm not going to take it away from you.
No, I mean, same with you. I'm not going to take your dumb opinion away. It is your stupid, wrong opinion, and you can have that.
Yeah, I think that we can both agree that both of us have opinions, and some of them are brilliant opinions about the best song in the movie.
And some of them are your opinions.
And then other people have, I'm just going to say it, best misguided dumb opinions about the best song in the movie, The Boys and Girls of Rock and Roll, which is not the best song in the movie.
Which is the best song in the movie.
Sad to say.
It's unfortunate that you're so wrong.
It's sad,
but I'm going to let you have it. You can be this wrong.
Is this one of those things where we're going to need to have the audience tell us? And then whoever is proven wrong by an audience poll just disagrees with it forever?
Yes. We're going to poll the audience, and whoever loses is like, nah, you're dumb.
I'm pretty sure if we were to put the poll together and it was just, which is the best song in the movie, is it The Boys / Girls of Rock and Roll, Diamond Dolls, or All of These Are Chipmunk Songs and I Didn't Listen to Them? That would be the one that would win by like 1,000%.
Well, yeah, it's like if Didn't Vote was running for president, they would have won by a landslide.
I think people would literally come out to the polls just to tell us that they didn't listen to either song because they are Chipmunk music from a 1987 Chipmunk special.
Well, they're just losing because these are great songs. Okay, so there's our best. What's the worst thing in this movie?
Oh, the worst thing in the movie is definitely the worst song, The Boys and Girls of Rock and Roll.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare say it's the worst song in this movie.
No, it is definitely the second best song in the movie. I think that's something we can all agree on. And the actual worst thing in the movie is... I mean, I don't want to take any of the insane plot stuff because that's what makes this movie fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'd say it's just the racism. It's just the heat big wampum
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, I was going to say, Fiji. I'm just going to take Fiji and say that's the worst thing in this film.
Yeah, I mean, Wooly Bully is not a song I desperately needed to hear, although it's not a terrible take on it.
Oh, I like Wooly Bully. It's a fine song.
Yeah.
But boy howdy, all of Fiji is just the worst.
It's pretty much the worst part of the film.
Like,
I mean, granted, you could also say the Mexico City dance number is pretty...
You could also go ahead and say that the Boy Sultan of Cairo... I love the Boy Sultan of Cairo, but I might say the worst thing in this is the random I'm gonna fuck snakes song.
That's fine. We'll just take two of the most insane things in the movie, the Boy Sultan of Cairo with his army of fuckable snakes... Or the swapping L's for R's bowl cut natives of tribal Fiji who wish to sacrifice a chubby little butterball to the tunes of Worry Burry.
Yep.
Either one of those might be the worst thing in the film. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to give this movie a rating. We're each going to give it 0 to 5, which gives us our rating out of 10. Jeff.
This is a 4. I'd watch this at any time of day.
The Chipmunk Adventure getting a 4 from Jeff.
That's correct. It's mostly for the songs and the fact that it's insane and captivating. Like when you're watching, you're like, what? Hang on. No, hold on. Go
there
back.
There is no way that this is happening.
Wait. Okay. Hold on. Wait. So the girls' clothes are all ripped up, but they have scuba outfits with or bathing suits with them and a change of identical clothes?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. All right. Oh, looks like Alvin travels with literally like 7 of those Alvin cassocks he's always wearing. What do you know? Huh?
They travel with Cossacks.
They travel with all these Prussians and Cossacks.
All right.
So I'm giving it a 4. This is great. A worthwhile movie to watch. It is the best Chipmunks movie, that's for sure.
For damn sure.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a 4 as well.
Yeah.
This is a solid 8 out of 10. This is a movie that when you put it on, there's very few times where you're like, I don't care what's going on, and usually it's during Diamond Dolls since it's an awful song. So
okay, first of all, Diamond Dolls is the climax of the film.
Okay, first of all, you little shit.
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response beyond this huge response I'm about to give you.
First of all, obviously the worst song is the dumb one about mothers.
Yeah, the My Mother, That's Who I Need song is probably the worst. Like, unless it's I
like you very much.
I think you're grand. Ugh. Yeah, that song might be the worst.
That's probably the worst.
The dumb song about mothers is at least only about 90 seconds long.
Yeah.
So... And nothing racist happens.
Jesus Christ, this dumb, insane, racist movie is so much fun to watch.
It
gets its hooks in you and you're like, I have a million questions.
I need to know everything about the Furstein's diamond operation. Why are they selling, why are diamonds illegal? Why are they so, how come Interpol is staffed with nothing but evil villains?
How come Interpol is nothing but gangsters they found from weird Dick Tracy
books? I mean, seriously, there's a point where they pull back on Jamal's office and it reveals that there's an Interpol sign on the window. But literally everything in his office is evil villain stuff.
Oh, he's got like one of those very slow fans on the ceiling and he's in his weird villain outfit and he may as well just have like a cat that he's stroking.
He is wearing a fez. He's wearing a white fez that matches his fat guy tuxedo he's wearing.
Is he?
Yes. Man. There's a scene with him in a fez in this movie.
God, this movie's so weird. Okay, guys, that has been our personal movie mastery for this week. I don't care what's on the list. That's what we did.
We'll go back to doing the list next time. We had to do this.
We had to, because this movie grabbed hold of us and would not let go until we had shared it with others. This is basically like the Ring video of movies.
Mm-hmm.
You have to share it with other people or else you die.
Luckily, the whole thing's on YouTube, so you can just go watch it if you want and catch up with us.
So thank you so so much for listening. If you still are, the five of you who made it through, who actually went and watched this movie before listening to us, we thank you for listening. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/systemmastery. That's where you can give any amount of support to us. We love anything. It lets us do stuff like this and keep expanding our shows into new things, such as we've got our Expanded Universe
Expounded Universe.
Yeah,
there we go.
We've got our RPG review, System Mastery. We've got live play things that we would like to do if equipment would allow it.
I think it will now. We have some new equipment.
Yeah,
I think
we got new equipment. Thanks again to listener Charles for giving us an entire new soundboard randomly. That was amazing.
Yeah, so we have a whole new soundboard. I think next time we do, we should be doing that Gamma Crawl episode next week. Probably, well, let's do it in my house this time. Why not?
Yeah, let's come on to my house. I'm gonna give you candy.
Which is a song sung in this movie, because things you didn't know about the Chipmunk universe. Mrs. Miller, their aged crazy babysitter, was the leader of a 1940s military doo-wop band.
Mrs. Miller and the Thrillers.
Listen to the things you can learn about the Chipmunks.
So, thank you so much for listening. We will, of course, be back in a couple weeks. We'll probably be doing either one from the list or our in theaters, which if you haven't voted, boy howdy, this month's in theaters was a crazy close race.
And
I don't
still
know
is.
How close
it's only
it
like
is.
The 10th. Yeah.
So go vote. You just go to SystemMasteryPodcast.com, go to our movie tab, and go to In Theaters Now to vote on that poll. And we'll be back, though, and we will see you then. But until such a time as we do, you have a good
one. Mm-hmm.